coming to see the Lord for who he truly is, which is what the glorification is about, is simultaneous from our perspective with the regeneration of the human mind. So as the mind is regenerated, so the Lord is seen more clearly for who he actually is. So these two things are like the double helix. It's that the two processes run together. And so the glorification, from a logopraxis point of view, is coming to see that the Word is the Lord, right down to the very letter. So that is the glorification of the Lord. Now, it's always been the Lord. There's never been a time when it hasn't been the Lord, right? So what we experience as incremental changes in our view of things are not changes in the Word or changes in the Lord taking place. They're changes within our mind as these truths get woven in and integrated into our minds and become a new ground or basis through which these things can be seen and perceived. Well, you think about the New Testament, you know, you have Matthew, which is much more grounded in the past. So the thing with the New Testament is the crowning idea is the Lord is a divine human. That's the crowning idea. But initially it's seen, yeah, like it's an acknowledgement, but, you know, here you have a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes. It's kind of, you know, it's tenuous. It's a tenuous idea at that point. But Mark is like the application of what's revealed through Matthew. And then you head to Luke, which is the new light. That's what Luke, the name light bringer, that's what his name means, light. So Luke is the light that comes out of practice. Matthew is the basis that we begin from, the very bedrock letter aspect. Mark is the application of that. Luke is the new understanding that flows from that. And what flows from it? John. It's the revelation that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. So that is what John is all about. And then the book of Revelation is what that insight brings about, which is a whole reorganization of the human mind. And that's what you get through the book of Revelation, is the disruption and the battles and the reordering and all of that sort of thing taking place. So the whole thing is a description of our process of coming to see that the Lord is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. And I mean, you see here in this liberation phase in the book of Exodus here, it all links into what's happening in the gospel. They're connected in that way. But this is the detail, just getting that much more detail here. But it's all one process and it's all governed by the Lord. So there's going to be states of anxiety, states of depression. All of these things are part of the process. But what the Word does is it instructs. And I mean, this is the point here, like the influx through Moses. You have the law divine or immediate influx, but then you have Aaron, which is our understanding of things. It's being conveyed through the doctrine down into a lower level, which is the organization of the text level, if you like, the letter level, into a form which can support all that. And it all brings meaning and purpose to the difficult states. But if there weren't any difficult states, then you would have to be a bit worried because things probably aren't working as they should be. So the difficult states are part of the deal. And what we mustn't lose sight of is that the way we see things at this level of life, the hells are right in our face. What we don't see so much of is what's going on behind the scenes, so far as what the Lord is doing in preparation of things. So that when this level is put off, what is more interior has a new exterior into which it can come forth. So this is the deal. This is the process. This is how it works. So yes, there's times of discouragement, but we've just got to keep coming back to first principles because they reground us. And we can trust the Lord as the Word that it will do what it says it will do. What the Lord has spoken has to come to pass. There's no question about that. I mean, one way of thinking about it in terms of the more internal historical is that the most ancient church lost the sensitivity of being able to feel that inflowing life as being from the Lord. And when that was lost, they felt it to be themselves. And so the understanding then had to be separated, and it's separated through the provision of truths or divine revelation, whereby what we understand can be in opposition to how we feel, and that opens the possibility for change. Because if we just run with how we feel, and, you know, obviously what's delightful to proprium is power and control and acquiring everything that everybody else has. And there's a certain delight in that. So there has to be a way of breaking that open so that that can be worked with in a way whereby we have this idea of self-compulsion. So to compel oneself to go against one's natural inclinations is true freedom in the sense of the regeneration of the human mind. So the self-compulsion comes from the truths you're given. So that is the Lord. Without those truths, there's no hope. And so this is what is meant by the Lord's advent. It's the bringing of what can save, which is the opening of the word. It's seeing the word in terms of viewing from the higher to the lower so that the lower becomes organized in a way whereby it can support the spiritual life. So one way of thinking about it is that before the rational is formed, you just have what is interior flowing into the external. And when innocence is present, that's fine. It works, but it can't resist more sophisticated arguments that are brought to bear. And so you have to have a rational mind built up in order to resist that. And so as that rational is built up, then how we understand the word as to its letter, locked in person, place, time and space, then that has to start to be transformed so that those higher principles can then govern our understanding of the word at the level of the letter, which is the level of our contact with it. And so we see that in every logopraxis cycle. We come to it, we're wondering, what's this about? You know, like we're at the level of person, place, space and time, trying to sort it out. Then we start to bring some spiritual principles to bear and the landscape starts to transform. And it transforms because the correspondences and what the Lord's provided at that level so that things can open up and we can have a view of our state rather than thinking historically of Pharaoh and the Egyptians and what have you. We begin to see that these things relate to our states of mind and that they're an ever-present reality. And then that's when transformation actually can take place. And it's through that transformation of our understanding of the word that the word is glorified. That's the glorification understood in terms of the text, right down to the very letter, the very body of the Lord, if you like, as far as the word is concerned, is transformed. And the letter becomes a vessel through which what is higher can be seen rather than something that's dark and obscure and can't be penetrated. So the coming forth of the Lord in terms of an advent through the word is really this idea of as we undergo regeneration, so the word is seen for what it truly is. And that's what's termed glorification. There's never been a time when the Lord hasn't been glorified. I mean, the Lord has always been God, you know, the infinite, eternal God. But our understanding of how that is has to be opened up in a way so it can be seen. And it can only be opened up if we're willing to practice. And that's charity. Like if we're willing to apply truths of the word to the life of our mind, to the states that are arising, to recognize what is opposed to the life of heaven, to shun evils as sins, like all of that leads to the opening up of the word to support the spiritual life more and more fully. But there is no opening of that without practice. So you can't learn it from the memory and it have any benefit in that sense unless there's a willingness to practice. That's the bottom line. So images are of a sensual nature, the sensory aspect to them. So they have that power to ground things in our awareness, but also to obscure. And that's kind of the themes that run through this reading. You know, the magicians and what they can do versus Moses and Aaron and what the Lord can do through them. Of course, the imagery is the letter of the word. And when that is attached to what is of the Lord, then it contains all power. And when it's always in relation to spiritual things, power always has to do with the power to save, the power to regenerate the human mind. And that's why the letter and those images are so important, because we can carry the images out much more easily than abstract ideas. But those images can bring the abstract in a way that's really powerful. Because it's also in the reading where it talks about with the Jews, with representatives being put in place. Again, you know, you're talking something very tactile and visceral in terms of those rituals and the garments and everything that's associated with those representatives. They are all powerful images as well. And when things are really difficult, sometimes all we have to hang on to are the most external things of the word, but they are there so that when the time comes for the mind to turn once more towards the Lord, there's support for that to actually happen. So those things can serve to maintain a state of possibility and potential. So all of these concepts and ideas that we're being put in front of, from our historical faith, we understand these things in one way, and then through work, they get redefined. The definitions change, and you change the definition of a term, and there's a whole raft of thinking that's associated with the old way of holding that definition that means that all that becomes unsettled. And so you're thrown into obscurity because you have to find a new way through as that new understanding comes to rework all those things that had been understood under an old understanding of them. You know, so the nativity stories, all of those stories, they are tender and they are vessels for innocent affections, and that's what returns. There's a ritualistic aspect around it which grounds interior states and makes them available to us in terms of our experience. But of course, the coming of the Lord, that's what this is about, this reading, these readings, this Egypt thing. This is the coming of the Lord. This is what it's actually really about. So we have the innocence and the loving kind of sphere and all of that that accompanies the nativity, but that's how it gets in. It's conditioned in a way that we are receptive of it. But once those truths go in, they begin to do their work. And what you have in the book of Revelation, I think you have quite a good example of that, where John's asked to eat the scroll, which is sweet as honey in the mouth, but bitter in the stomach. So for truths to be digested and to do their work is a difficult thing, because it's asking us to lay down our life. And as we see from Pharaoh's responses, come hell or high water, there's just this unwillingness to let go of what is the Lord's, right? So the sons of Israel are the Lord's. They are the truths. And what you have is proprium has hold of these truths, but it uses them in order to affirm its own sense of self, and it's not going to let those go easily. And so it has magicians that work to cast the fog around the whole thing to make it as if I am a self is such a strong feeling within us, but none of it is true. And that's what the word is continually working to point out. So as it points these things out, sort of a requirement on us to respond. And that's a difficult thing to do when we have a sense of being so right in how we view things. And the word puts us into a position of how the way we hold things, you know, the falsities that arise from fallacies is just destructive. And it has to be laid down.